There's so much potential.
Liars.
You don't represent women in politics.
Fucking talking points.
Celebrity interviews, uplifting stories.
Bullshit.
Shop our favorite.
Where's that independent guy?
What makes a police officer choke someone out in broad daylight who's crying for the mother who's telling them that they can't breathe?
Yep. Got it. It's the king of independent talk. America's only independent voice. Rob Redding.
First of all, I just want to say thank you, Mr. Redding, for being the voice of the voiceless, man. You're very important.
You know, people say that racism comes from a construct of not being educated. I don't think any of those things are actually the answer.
Where's my Twitter?
You know that I'm enjoying the show this morning. What is your name again?
We need to be listening to your voice and your station at drive home time.
I've just recently learned about the radio show, and you're on it.
The gloves are off, and Mr. Nice Guy has left the damn building. He's the baddest bisexual in talk history. This is Rating News Review, Unrestricted.
This is Rating News Review, Unrestricted. I'm Rob Redding, America's independent voice, giving press news to know. This show, you talk about this show, the fear. This is Rating News Review, Unrestricted. Welcome to the program. Wow, what a day, what a day, what a day. With all the news out there about nuclear war being possible, and I know a lot of you losing sleep as a result of this. This has affected a lot of people. I'm not going to be dismissive about it, but I want to just say this. Let's table that the conversation until the first American city falls, which will probably be New York, which means we won't ever have the conversation. And that, I would just say goodbye to you. In other words, just goodbye already. You know, Putin killed me, and just know that my heart was at some point to address this matter. At the end of the day, well, I should say me and a whole lot of other people, millions of people that live here in New York. Good day, good day, good day to you. It is the Weekend Review. It's time to talk about the serious stories that affect black people. One of those stories was The Crown. We talked about it over 2 days with the funeral of Queen Elizabeth. And I want to recap that in a moment. But first, I want to start with one of our latest shows where we had one of the best shows talking about black death. Let's focus it with that conversation with Prince McNally, who was incredible with his poem about black death.
Struggling to breathe. Shortly after the Chauvin conviction, the collective lungs of black America joyously expanded, exhaling a heavy sigh of relief and jubilation, not just for the memory of George Floyd, but for 400 years of pain and injustice. For all those who have fallen in the struggle, at the hands of the slave trade in the Middle Passage, at the hands of Jim Crow, at the hands of police brutality, the judicial system in the prison industrial complex, at the hands of hate and oppression via systemic racism, it was a short-lived celebration. For soon after, there was another killing, another murder, and collectively we sighed as their air escaped their lungs. We began to sink back into the hole they tried so hard to bury us in, saying to ourselves, oh my God, here we go again, America. Another lynching of another African-American citizen. I have grown so weary of the news. I rarely watch television these days. I'm so damn tired of this ongoing saga of black folks being slaughtered at the hands of the police. It's a recurring theme, a nightmare so surreal you develop a kind of immunity where your soul grows cold with a hollow numbness that encapsulates your senses. You become tone deaf. With an ear of indifference, a coping mechanism, blind to the injustice. At some point, you cease counting the numbers, the names and faces become inconsequential, just one massive blur, an abstract collage of African-American tragedy, just another black body under attack, under fire, under siege, under a noose of an officer's knee, just another senseless act of police brutality leaving in its wake. Another grieving family, another life extinguished, another soulless carcass, a barren shell of blackness, swallowed whole by hatred. In moments such as this, we question God's intention. Wherein lies the hand of grace? Where's Jesus when you need him? But as much as we yearn for answers, raising questions never once raised the dead. So what's the moral of this poem? Perhaps these mounting crucifixions are but a stepping stone, a pathway to heaven, a portal to immortality. If only we could martyr them. But how do you martyr someone who did not choose to die? So we pray for them as we lay this mournful bed of flowers at their graves. We weep for them, an ocean of tears, for their last breath was wasted struggling to breathe. Thank you.
Prince McNally, incredible, well-spoken individual. Looking forward to his book coming out soon, and also looking forward to those dates that are coming up in New York and around New York. If you missed that show, you need to be subscribing to this show at ReadingNewsReview.com. Now, we move forward with what is going on with the crown, the future, and how the royal family is fucking it up. Let's start with the family, and then also go back to the issues with the funeral and how Meghan is being perceived, and evaluation of black life and the devaluation of black life, I should say, within the royal family. Listen to what the future of the crown is. Listen to this. And I had some more things I wanted to say about it outside of the fact that the family has a lot of changes. And that is the whole thought of king and queen and royal family and what is royalty. That's really what I want to talk about today. So let's start with Michael Jackson, right? And the reason why I want to start with Michael Jackson is because I remember the King of Pop, Michael Jackson. And I remember when he wanted to crown himself king, and people went along with it. Now, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Where did King of Pop come from? It came from, and I know this as a communication person, I know this as someone who's worked in advertising and branding and marketing. It came from Michael referring to himself in a press release, or his publicist, referring to Michael as the King of Pop. Now, one of the things that I know about journalists is that they're lazy. I had someone ask me, you know, Rob, what happened to the Carvel story? Well, journalists are lazy, right? It took a lot of work to get that story. I told you, I worked a month on getting that story. And the people were damn near impossible to find. I never spoke to Fire, who was called the nigger on the beach that day. But I know how to write a news story. And I also know how to write a press release. And because I know how to write a news story, I really know how to write a press release. And if you, let me explain. If you are a very good news writer, you can write a good news release, but if you're a good press release writer, it's not necessarily going to translate into a news story, but a good press release writer will make a great news story. And you know you're good when the news copy looks just like what you turned in. Okay, when I say the news copy, I'm talking about the print in the next day's editions. Or, as we say now, online journalism, that's the way it is. By the way, kudos to Timothy French for being in the New York Times. I have to say that while we're talking about the news. That was on Sunday in Sunday's paper, but it was online first, and I linked to it on the socials. And so congratulations to Timothy French. They deserve it. They absolutely deserve it. They do a great job with the Barbies. And, you know, it is an amazing project that Timothy's been doing. But, you know, things hit the net first, and then they hit the papers the next day. And sometimes they don't even hit the papers. So when you see your press release verbatim in a news story, you know you've done your job. As a matter of fact, you know you've done the journalist's job. So what happened with Michael Jackson is he called himself the King of Pop. And he did it in a news release, or the publicist did it in, I don't know whether Michael thought of this. Whoever the publicist is needs to get paid a hell of a lot of money if they haven't already. They thought of calling him, or someone thought of calling him the King of Pop. It landed in a news release, and then it landed where? In a newspaper where you read it. And then we started calling him, I started calling him, you started calling him the King of Pop. Now, this has been a disputed title because someone finally asked the question, how the fuck did he become the King of Pop? Now, we know, I already told you, I already demystified how it had happened. But what happened is someone finally asked the question, when did he become, who waved the scepter over his head and said, he's the King of Pop? Well, he did. And that is the same thing that's going on in the UK. 1,000 or so years ago, someone said, you guys are the key to getting the Christ. Or someone within that family said, or within its, you know, its early family members said, and I don't recall, I went to sleep when they told me. Okay? To me, it's a boring fucking story. And it's a lot of fucking kings and queens until we get up to the one that just died. So, and her name was Elizabeth, just in case you haven't been paying attention. With all the funeral coverage yesterday, I'm sure you were paying attention. The fact is this. You know, whoever that person was is brilliant. That person is brilliant. They now are printing money. And Charles is, you know, we don't even know how much Charles is worth. We don't even know how much the royal family is worth. But, you know, what I find coincidental about all of this is white folks are just now really asking the question, who made you fucking king and queen? When they have automatically done this to black folks systematically throughout the spans of history. They've always asked, nigga, who the fuck made you king? Who made you the King of Pop? Michael Jackson. Well, Michael did. He waved the scepter over himself or over his publicist and paid them well for referring to him as the King of Pop. Now, they've done this to black folks throughout history, okay? And they do it in current history. So before we go back even further, let's just say there are many kings and queens all over the world. Many of them are in the black and brown world, and none of them get the attention of the royal family in England. When people say the royal family, universally they mean the one in England. They don't mean the one in some country in Africa. They don't mean a one in Asia or India or anywhere else. Wherever they have a royal family, they don't mean that one. They mean the royals in Europe. That's what they mean. And their families that spread throughout places like Belgium, etc. You get the point. They don't mean black and brown people. They don't mean niggas. And anytime you have black and brown people that are kings and queens, we see this throughout the history of colonization. What do? They literally come and they show up and they say, nigga, who made you king and queen? Who made you? Who said you were the king? Or they look at the land and territory that they are lording over and they say, this is a wasteland. And then they come in, they take everything and they make the king a slave and the queen a slave and they save them into chattel slavery. And then they take all the resources that they found underneath the land that was supposedly just nothing. And so we've seen this through the history of mankind, which is just really disheartening. And I know I'm telling you what you already know, but I just want to put this on, while we're looking at the funeral, and we're looking at all this pomp and circumstances, and these white kids crying, and you know Fergie's crying, and people, all these people are fucking crying over this woman, who subjugated colonies that became the Commonwealth. We covered all of this yesterday, but when we look at where we are with the legitimacy of them, and why we're even doing this. I think that many people are starting to ask the question, but not enough people are, right? You know, we've talked about the Commonwealth on the show, right? And we've talked about how the Commonwealth doesn't really support the crown anymore, how there's been fractionalization, how Charles may not be able to bring it back together. And it's not just the Commonwealth or the former colonies, but it's the current policy, which we talked about yesterday, within the family of Meghan. All right, and her accusations about Archie, all right, being too dark, and go figure, a master, which ties into our current conversation, right? again, it's almost like, nigga, who made you king? And nigga, we ain't gonna make you a prince. Okay? This all ties in. Making sure this is on, I swear to God, I'm killing this on several levels. If there's any crystallization that is possible from all the shows I've done on the Queen and all the coverage that you've watched, it is this show right here. Because this is where it all comes together. You have Archie, who's a young black boy, because his mom's white and black, but he's going to be black, okay? And his daddy, of course, as you know, is white. So, Harry, Prince Harry. So, my point is this. At the end of the day, they're never going to wave a scepter over us and say, you're great. You're the highest. You're the best. We got to take that shit. But you already know that. Like, Rob, you're preaching to the choir. Some of you have already taken it. I mean, look, I've, you know, taken it when I say talking about taking it. Not just taking it as in racism, but taking the scepter and waved it over yourself. And you become captains of your own industries. I've got plenty of people that listen to this show, that subscribe to this show, that are the best at what they do. Okay? I talked to one this weekend. Larry's one of our people. He subscribes to the show out in California. He is one of the best at what he does. All right? Thank you, Larry. As always, you're always a very important conduit to me figuring out what's going on the West Coast. But what I'm saying is this. And I know Larry didn't expect me to name check him, but I just wanted to do that. The fact is that many white folks never will admit and never will say you are the best, you are incredible, you are a king, or you are a queen. We have to continue to do that for ourselves. And it is important that we understand that we see ourselves as kings and queens, captains of industries. You know, I remember, and I never really even thought about this much, but one of the times that I was out with Deborah, and I know many of you might not have ever heard that name, but some of you have. And you've heard that name if you listened closely to me talk in the past. But let me be a little clearer right now, because she's also in the Professor Witnessing White Power. I drew a sketch of Deborah, and I like Deborah. And I think she's okay. I think she's all right. I haven't spoken to her in a while. She's gotten cancer since we dated. But she was this crazy French woman. And I do mean that. She was from Paris. She was a crazy French woman. And I remember one day, one night, she said to me, the king of independent talk, she was just kind of laughed about it. Well, she's white. So she's white French, whatever. The point is that I remember saying to myself, I really never even thought about it. It's like, I'm sure that once, you know, I don't know, Michael Jackson put it somewhere in a release somewhere, and he called himself the king of pop. He pretty much, you know, started going by it, never thought about it again. Well, when she heard my show for the first time, I mean, that's all you hear, like, the king of independent talk, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, when I said that to, I don't know, whoever put together my first drop, I think it was probably Theo, I think he might have called me king. I don't know how it even got into the copy. I might have called myself king, thinking about Michael Jackson calling himself the king of pop. And I said, I don't know, the king of independent talk. America's, I've always been America's independent voice. I thought of that myself. And I knew if I kept saying it enough, people would cling on to it. And now everybody claims that they're an independent that's doing talk radio, and that we know that's not true. But the fact is, that is a slogan I thought of myself. I don't really recall how I even became the king of independent talk. Maybe it was Theo, maybe it was myself. Maybe it was both of us coming together and thinking about it. Well, I never thought about it again until Deborah said to me, whoa, the king of independent talk. That was a big thing, and I didn't think about it until, I really didn't think about it until the fact we're sitting in Europe. So to say you're the king of something, that's huge. So that's why she made a big deal about it. She went on and on. The king of independent talk, Rob, wow, that's a hell of a statement. The king, not the king in America, but the king of independent talk. Not the king of just, you know, Georgia or Atlanta, but the king of independent talk. Not the king of just New York talk, the king of independent talk. Not the king of political talk, but the king of all talk, independent talk. Rob Redding. And so she made a big deal about this because These things matter to them. Okay? These things matter to white people. And they matter to black people. I'm not saying they don't. But the ability to be able to call yourself that thing has to emanate from them. Do you understand what I'm saying? Or unless it has no weight, no respect, or is called into question. All right? It's called into question. You're looked at like you have two heads. You're looked at like you are crazy. You were looked at like, nigga, how dare you have the audacity? That's one of the things that stuck out to me. And one of the reasons why I didn't take her seriously beyond this point is because she was just like, she made this such a big deal of it. And then, of course, I began to understand we're in Europe and, you know, supposedly people are born into these lines where they call themselves kings. And the assertion might even seem preposterous, you know, to someone who is raised in a society where they are under a king and a queen, or a queen or a king, and they see an American referring to themselves as a king. They could probably be quite literal about it. At least she was. And what's interesting is I had never really thought a whole lot about this until that point. I just want you to understand this, and here is the takeaway. When we look at the images of that pine box, which is now in a family crypt, we look at what has happened and transpired before our very eyes. We have to ask ourselves this very honest question. Like, really? How did they begin to convince us that their ice is colder? And should we still be convinced, and should we care? And if we don't feel that we're convinced, and we don't care, then what are we going to do about it? How are we going to counter it? And what are we going to say about ourselves that matters? Because I think Michael is one of those people, and I dare say myself, I'm one of those people, maybe Theo, that's given some thought about how we should be branding ourselves to get, you know, ourselves trending, like the kids say, you know, hashtag. How should we move forward? How do we become the next thing? You know, when Basquiat made crowns for people, that was a controversial thing as an artist, aesthetically, to say that Jack Johnson was a king. It's one of the people he gave a crown to. You know, that Jack Johnson was a king. To give black people crowns, it's still a big thing. When Biggie decided that he was going to sit on a chair and give himself a crown, that was a big thing. Huge. When you do those types of things, it doesn't escape the notice of white people. But most importantly, we should be concerned about the impact it has on black people. That's the reason why I say, if it does matter, if we do care about the perception, about what we feed our souls and our spirit, is to do what? To value ourselves. And the products that our people are putting out are not inferior, but just as good and superior as those that are produced by people that don't look like us. All right? Never convince yourself that your ice is not as cold. Never convince yourself that you are not as good. Never convince yourself that you are not the king or queen that they are making themselves out to be. Why? Just because they said it? We're sitting there watching hours of this woman being put into the ground. And now, and this is one of the most important parts of that message, besides being in a situation where I'm trying to encourage you to be better. But now they want to continue it with the bloodline of Charles, who was a philanderer, much like how his family got the crown in the first place from their cousins. And then he married a woman who is married, which is one of the reasons why they were able to get the crown in the first place, because the last king abdicated over this shit. What is so interesting is you even take it a step further, and now we have to call this bitch queen. Yeah, I called her a bitch. At the end of the day, I'm just being honest. When is enough enough? Just because somewhere, somehow, a few thousand years ago, someone called themselves a king or a queen, they are allowed to print money? When do we get our shot at printing money? Because I'm going to tell you like this. That's all it takes is for you to say you are the new it person. You're the king, captain, emperor, whatever it is, empress of a brand new thing. And then that's it. But beware and understand, they're going to come for you. Just like they came for Basquiat. They're going to come for you. Just like they came for Michael Jackson. They're going to come for your crown. Just like they came for me. There'll be imitators. There'll be people that claim that they're you, or even say, nigga, what the hell do you think you're doing? King. King. King of anything. Queen. Queen. Queen of anything. But understand this. This is a long-time generational issue where only they supposedly believe in their heads that they're able to wave a scepter over each other and knight and do all the things that they do and make their children either masters or princes, etc., or angels, etc. At the end of the day, this is very much standard operating procedure for them. But it needs to become standard operating procedure for us. And I know it has been, because we have the evidence in our black countries, our brown countries, where we've done it, but we just don't get the credit. Now, let's just stop and do a full stop and start giving ourselves the credit. And this is where channels like, and I'm using my media, channels like the Griot channel, which is the former Black News channel, which is restarting, which I'm glad to see. This is where they can do their part. When our kings and queens die, and when our kings and queens ascend in our former colonies and Commonwealth countries, we can make as big of a deal about it with continuing coverage like they do. Because if anything, I've learned this from white people. They are the biggest liars anyone has ever seen. The biggest thieves anyone has ever known. And the biggest conquerors that the world has ever seen bring about calamity. And it's because of their conquering in the form of colonization and commonwealth, as we now call it, that we are in this mess in the first place. We need a complete and total mind shift. So what needs to be dead in that casket is the idea of thinking of looking to them, and because I know many of us don't look to them for validation, but also understanding that when we do these things, they're never going to approve. But understanding that we have to stop looking to them in the first place for it to be okay. Guys, I've had fun, but I gotta run. If I'm not here, I'm there. There is ReadyNewsReview.com on the World Wide Web. Brain like go to sitting on the dock of the bay, baby. NewsReview.com on the World Wide Web. Yes, it's my family. Yes, I relate to those Reading, but it's not my money, which means I'm back your way. The king of independent talk. Mañana after 4 p.m. with more Ready News Review Unrestricted. I said it and I meant it. I also meant this the day before when I talked about how they are screwing the pooch when it comes to Meghan. People say Meghan should be concerned about how she's perceived. I think the family should be concerned about how they're perceived. It's the exact opposite. And this comes down to black death, black bodies, the valuation of how you value Archie, who's only a master and not a prince. It'll be interesting to see how they deal with these issues. Here's what I said on Monday.
Family.
Everybody's got one, and everybody has jacked up folks in their family. I want to talk about the royal family. You know, it's not that I am actually a big fan of Meghan Markle. I'm not really a fan of hers. I just want to start by saying this. I never knew who the woman was, and I can't say that I like much of what I've seen since she has been very public about the level of racism in the royal family. However, the fact that she's pulled the veil off of the racism in the royal family with Archie, who's master instead of prince at the moment, how he is now sixth in line for succession to the crown and is still master and not prince at the moment, the hue of his skin being a determining factor, or at least something that was discussed, those things are really, really important to underscore, not past racism, not some colony situation that became a commonwealth or commonwealth countries that don't want to continue under the crown under Charles, but it has given us insight into how this family, the royal family, how this culture pervades still to this day. And that's what I want to talk about. You know, every family has its problems. My family has its problems. Your family has its problems. I'm very transparent about the problems that my family has for the most part. I've talked to you about emotional parentification, which is something that you probably hadn't heard of until I started talking about it on this show. I've talked about it in the process of, and one of the things I watched is Atlanta. They're dealing with an episode of counseling, and he's going to the counselor. The lead character is going to the counselor. And he gets laughed at because he's going to a counselor, someone to talk about his problems, his emotions. It's been a while since I've been to a counselor. It's been before the pandemic. My sessions ended right before that. The counselor said, I don't need counseling. I just need to put myself first. And I probably share that with you. But the point is this, is that I think it's good to talk to somebody when you need to talk to somebody. I've been saying that to you, and I'll say that to all the men listening that are reluctant to go talk to somebody. One of the things about the Atlanta episode is that it gave me an insight on something that's really important, and that is, again, there's a stigma about black men talking about their feelings and going to talk therapy, and I wanted to underscore that it is important that if you feel like you've had a family situation or things happen in your life that you want to talk about, it's important to talk about them. Never forget that Frantz Fanon was a person who studied black people from a psychological perspective, that he, in his counseling, talked about if he met black men who were happy, he was really skeptical, given the fact of the maltreatment of black people. It was one of the things that Frantz Fanon said that Dr. Lewis Gordon brought me to about Frantz Fanon, is that if you are happy being mistreated, then you are really psychologically done. You're baked. Okay, if you can say as a black man you're happy with the treatment that this country is engaged in, then you truly are disturbed. How can you be happy with the mistreatment of others? Now, I'm simplifying it and boiling it down, but Frantz Fanon was a lot better at saying it, that in essence, if you are being mistreated, how can you be happy? In what way can you be happy? If you're being followed around the stores, if you're being, you know, called a criminal when you've never done anything wrong, if you are being looked at as if you're some beast, you're going to rape, pillage, murder all the time, how can you be happy with that? And how this mistreatment falls upon your feet every single day. And then there's your family. There's the way the family operates and the talk. You know, one of the things that was interesting, I was in Atlanta, speaking of Atlanta, and I was sitting and I was listening to a news report with my friend, Mike. And Mike says to me, after we listened to this report, that's crazy. And both of us like Tyler Perry. But what I'm about to tell you is really interesting, because it happens within the family dynamic, and it's not off of the royals. It actually goes right along with everything else. And that is this. What is interesting is Tyler Perry has decided not to have a talk with his child, his son, which is one of the most disrespectful and dangerous things I think you can do. First of all, it's disrespectful because you don't trust that he is able to handle the talk. Maybe you haven't done a good enough job parenting, okay? That's disrespectful to him, the son. And then it's dangerous because he could get killed because he didn't get the talk. So he says that, you know, his son doesn't necessarily have the issues with people. He doesn't really see kind of color. He doesn't use that example, but he says his friends are all very open-minded. His friends come from all different walks of life. But that doesn't mean his friends, and this is what we've seen study after study, don't see him as a black person that's not qualified to get a job, not qualified to get the better things in life over them. This is the thing that people overlook the most, is that, you know, you might have a rainbow coalition of friends, but when it comes down to getting a job, when it comes down to income inequality, when it comes down to does racism really exist, and you start polling those people and that they're honest, they say that everybody's got an equal and level playing field, that you shouldn't get a job that they shouldn't get, they should get the job just as much as you, that you have things that are undeserved. These are the undercurrents that are often in society that are racist, that is racism that's bubbling under the surface. It's not overt, it's more covert, all right? And there are words to describe this, like du jour racism, etc. But the fact is that that is the undercurrent of society, all right? And that is where we are with society. So while you have a rainbow coalition of friends, the problem is that many of these friends don't think that you are deserving of special treatment because of the lineage of slavery, or that you are not being held back, etc., if they're being honest. And so to not inform your child within a family dynamic as a father is irresponsible, I would argue. My family informed us, my siblings and I, as a result of the racism that's out there, how white people treat you, how they will treat you, and how you have to protect yourself. Those are all things that we were told. Now, what's interesting about my family dynamic, and this is the thing I don't know what else to compare it to, because when I talk about my childhood, I spent a lot of time this past weekend putting together some things from my father's house. And, you know, he's got a lot of stuff in his house. And I was very selective about what I took out of the house. I took a few things, but one of the things I took were pictures of my childhood. And it was interesting to go through those pictures this weekend, because I was kind of dumbfounded. I mean, I knew that there were some pictures that were there that I wanted. There's still one picture that I don't know what happened to. It is a picture of me in a wig as a kid. My parents put it in the book, and it wasn't there when I went to my dad's house. I don't know where it is. But my sisters put me in this wig. I think it was more like one of my mom's wigs or something like that. I don't know where they got this damn wig for me to wear, but it's in a picture. And I couldn't find that one. I just always thought it was a funny picture as a kid, because I just looked funny in a wig. I have no interest whatsoever in cross-dressing or being a drag queen or, you know, anything like that. Having dated a drag queen, we've talked about it. And, you know, they've said to me, I wonder what you look like in makeup. I've never had this desire to be in makeup, to be in stilettos, to be in lingerie, to do any of that stuff. And I'm not being hard on anybody that wants to do that. It's just that I've never had that desire. My point is that when I'm going through these pictures this weekend, I'm looking at all the memories we had as a child. And all these pictures of me are really young. I mean, I've got kindergarten certificates, all kinds of stuff like that, that I've been able to pull out of my father's house. I've kind of had to let them air out, dry out. cleaned them because he had some mold and mildew and stuff like that issues going on. But I've pretty much got everything where it needs to be, and I've digitized a lot of the photos that I would like to have. And that was all like a 2 or 3 hour process. I still have to put them in a book, in a new book, because the binder that it was in was slightly mildewed. The point of why I'm telling you all of this is because I'm glad I went through these pictures, because it reminds me, besides my emotional parentification, of when I was a young child. Young. Like around from the age of, the most pictures of me are, I saw pictures, I don't even know where the hell we are, with my mother and my father. At some point, maybe I can talk to my dad about these pictures. But what's interesting is I saw pictures of me like holding my mom's hand right after she had me, you know, as I got, you know, able to walk. I saw pictures of myself with my father, probably eating my first ice cream on a boat. I don't even know what the boat is. I don't even know where we are. Probably in Michigan, knowing my dad. He loved Michigan and loves Michigan. So I always got the thought that he would run away to Michigan if he could. He actually tried when he was in his 20s, and his mom called him and told him he had to come back home. When he didn't, she went and got him in Michigan or something like that. My point is that these pictures reminded me from a young age up until around 3 years old, how happy I was. There's a picture of me and my father. My father and I, we are in the pool, and he's teaching me how to swim. I think I remember this moment. I think I remember this moment of him holding me and me kicking and me trying to swim. And that was just one of the ones that stood out to me. There's another picture of me during a birthday at 1, 3, and a little bit older. But there's one picture of myself with my mother, and she is helping me cut the cake. I don't remember that, but I love the picture. I love the picture of my mother and I trying to cut my birthday cake, or cutting my birthday cake with her assistance. She's reaching over me. She's got my right hand in her hand, and she's helping me cut the cake. It's a chocolate cake. I hate chocolate in this way. I've never liked chocolate cake. I like brownies, but I don't like chocolate cake. It's just not my favorite. And so anyway, my point is that we're cutting this cake, and it is a moment. It clearly is a moment, and I don't remember the moment. But I'm reminded of how great my childhood was up until around 3 or 4, and then when I became very perceptive, my intelligence started to emerge more to people, and that I was able to be more of an empath. You kind of get this kind of emotional parentification that I've talked about. And what's interesting is during that time also, we were talking about racism, and we were told about racism. Now, my mother was far more militant than my father, far more militant. And out of that, I got from my mother, who was very high yellow, whitish looking, that you had to be very aware of color, especially even in the black community. And whether she was teaching this lesson overtly or covertly, it wasn't really clear to me. But what was interesting is that she talked about how light she was and how she always had to fight because black folks always gave her shit about how light she was. And so I was very well aware, again, either overtly or covertly, she was giving us these messages about colorism in the black community. So when I heard about colorism, I believed it. I didn't have to like question and say, oh, well, is that real? Is that a real thing? No, I remember my mom talking about it. She didn't call it that, but she just talked about how she had to fight all the time coming up as a kid. But that colorism also extended with her outside of the black community. When I used to get in trouble at school, or was to say I was a troublemaker at school. I don't even think I was even a troublemaker. It was just that I was over-scrutinized. I was watched more intently. When I got beyond the adolescent phase into the young adult phase, I was watched more. And it's like my sisters never got in trouble in high school. I remember one thing that my mother said to the principal, and it was very interesting what she said to the principal, and that was, is she says, I never got called up here for Kena and Nadra, my sisters. But what is it about Robert? What is it about Robert that makes him so different, and I'm here every other day or every day as a result of him. That's because he's a black man. And it's just one of the things that was very interesting that my parents made it very visible and clear, even before that moment, even during that moment, even after that moment, that racism was real and that black people were treated differently than white people. This is really important that I kind of drive this home. That talk happened continuously. It wasn't just one talk, but it was talk followed by example after example after example. The way my father talked about racism was not that white folks, you got to watch out, you got to do this, you got to do that. What it was is he gave examples of how he was being discriminated against at his job. He would talk about the white men and how the white men would treat him. He would talk about how people got promotions that he felt he should have got. He would talk about how he was treated in a social atmosphere. He didn't say white folks are racist. He gave us examples of it. Okay? And that's very different than my mom. That's very different than my mom in this way. My mother was a lot more frank and more direct about racism versus my father, who gave empirical evidence of it, if that makes any sense. The point is that then manifests in us thought about race, white versus black, black versus white. And from that, we had our own set of experiences. I've talked to you about being called a nigger at the top of the driveway. I've talked to you about being called a nigger at Blockbuster for those people that were the purchasers of Out Loud. I told you should get the biography. If you didn't get it, you don't know what I'm talking about, probably. I've told you about being called a nigger while running through the University of Louisiana Monroe's campus. I've told you about being in situations where I was overtly discriminated against. And that is something that my sisters were around for. Now, I told you Nadra defended me, and I've also, when I was called a nigger at the top of the driveway, and I told you how my mother handled it, how she went over to the house and of the young white man who lived next door, the Vandivers, and how she talked to Mama Vandiver. And Mama Vandiver and her had a special relationship. And what is interesting is she said that it will never happen again, and it didn't. But it also happened to my oldest sister, I found out years later, Kina, that she was called the nigger as well. And she handled it. She didn't get mom involved or anything like that. The point is that from these instances, and even others that I know about and maybe even don't, my sisters have developed their own set of biases against white people. Some of them, I'm not going to name any names, I think are just outright racist thoughts about them. I don't have or share those thoughts. I have my views of white people, but my views of white people are based on the experiences that I've had with them, and I never, ever, as with anybody, let me just say that, as with anybody, I'm tabula rasa when it comes to people. I'm literally, that's Latin for I'm a blank slate. I give everybody a blank slate, and then I start writing. I don't base my thought on them based on anything other than my experiences with that person. I don't make any other decisions based on people outside of my experiences. I'm going to say it again, with that person, regardless of their race, nationality, all of that stuff. It is based on race, sex, gender, all of that. Still to this day, it is based on what happens with that individual. It's not based on, are you white and I don't like white people? Are you Asian and I don't like Asian people? Are you Indian, red dot, not feather, or feather, and I don't like you people? None of that stuff. Latino, none of that matters to me except for the experience I have with you, the individual. So that's my thought. But that's not the thought of at least one of my sisters, who I just think is a straight-up racist, to be honest with you. And it just depends on how you catch her, how she kind of comes at it. So why am I telling you this? I am telling you this because most families are not that honest. When you are dating people, when you're friends with people, a lot of times most people won't be honest with you about how racist their family is or what are the issues within their family. And I think it takes character for that person to do that. I think it takes character for that person to want to talk about that trauma to you or to a therapist who, you know, if you can find one. And in this episode of Atlanta, he was able to find a black therapist like a France Fanon type that's able to give him some feedback. But that's really rare to find somebody, a person of color, for one thing, to tell anything to in terms of talk therapy. But it's definitely tough to find a black therapist. So if you get to that point where you're able to talk about these things, most people are not honest. And the few that are really, I would argue, in touch. Now, I've seen some things since I've been dating around, even from people who are in denial, okay, who will admit to racism in their family and then turn around and then say, well, they will accept whoever I bring home. You simply know that's not true. You just told me your parents are racist, and I got to give it up to you that, you know, you say that, but I do believe that you're a little bit racist yourself, especially when you make comments to me like, for instance, that your preference is to date someone within your own race that's rich. So those things color my view of you, and they color, and I write those things down. The reason why any of this matters is because the royal family has a problem with race. It is very clear. And they're not being honest with us. Now, this is a place in Britain that has a 1,000-year history with this family. 1,000-year history. And when Meghan made her thoughts public about Archie's complexion, about him being too dark, and then it turns around, it manifests itself, where he becomes a master instead of a prince. This lets you know that this shit is not just made up. There's something going on. Everybody else, all his other cousins, are princes and princesses. He's sixth in line, and he's the only one who's a master. Okay? Making sure this is on. Because I know you were like, how in the hell does any of this have to do with anything? Because when I go through my family tree, and when I talk about my family, I'm very clear about where I'm at, okay? See, I can bring anybody home, and I will defend them. And I have. I brought people home, brought Timothy home. And when I brought Timothy home, I was very clear. This is the person I'm going out with. End of story. And you will accept them. But most people are not like me, okay? And most people will not check their loved ones. They talk that shit, but they won't. I'm not the kind of person that's going to backpedal and say, well, you know what? My preference is that I find a rich black guy. Or even a poor one or a middle class one. I don't have those type of race preferences. I just don't have them. I never have. Even as much as I have been called nigger and disrespected by, let's just, I'm not even going to talk about a black, white, you know, just versus situation. I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about Native American. I'm talking about red dot. I'm talking of Indian. I'm talking about Asian people. You can keep going. Latino people. What I'm saying to you is that I don't have these preferences that other folks have. Okay, and I'm not going to be pressured into it. So if I want to bring you home, I'm going to bring you home. And I don't have any, well, I can't bring you home because you're this. I have a, I can't bring you home because you're not the person for me. But that has nothing to do with your race. That has nothing to do with your nationality. That has nothing to do with, in many instances, your gender or your sex or anything like that. It has more to do with what is on your sheet of paper when I gave you that blank slate. That's what it has to do with. So the royal family, like most families, unfortunately, and like most people within those families, is not being honest. And the thing I can respect about Meghan is that she blew the lid off. And that had to take some courage. That still doesn't make me a big fan of hers, but I admire the fact that we're not talking about some past Commonwealth conversation or past colonial conversation. What we are talking about is right now, how the royals are treating black people right now, not in some fucking past tense. We're talking about right now. This is what they do. This is how they talk. This is how they act. And until they correct it, until they deal with their shit, I'm not going to be in awe of anything I see. Look, I've watched the coverage. God knows I've watched the coverage. You know, my nosy neighbors know I've watched the coverage. You know, all they do is make what I do their business. Now, I don't want to get into that. That's not even important. But let me just tell you what I've observed. I've observed them talk a little bit more now about the colonies that will be accepting or not accepting, or the Commonwealth, as they call it now. I've heard the talk about the handbag. I've heard the talk about the fashion. I've heard the talk about Diana. I've heard the talk about Camilla, her replacement. I've heard the talk about, you know, what will Charles do with the crown? I've heard about the boys and it being reminiscent of their mother, of walking behind the casket. I've heard about Charles going through the line and them going from God bless the queen to God bless the king. I've heard about David Beckham standing in line. But what I have not heard is the realness that Charles says he's going to bring. And until he does that, until he brings that realness, until he's able to bring Harry home and say, you know what, I accept your black wife. I will make Archie a prince instead of a master. And I will respect the next in line and the sixth and the seventh. That's what I need to hear. And that doesn't deal with some old colonies. If he wants to bring the colonies back in, then he's got to accept his little black grandbaby. Okay? All right? That and his daughter-in-law. Those are the things he's got to do right now. Okay? If he wants to keep the attention of black folks, if he wants me to even care about his mama being in a casket, he's got to do those things. And that is something fundamentally most families and the people who are the products of them are unable to do. They're unable to be like the person that told me, yes, my family is racist. But at the same time, turn around and say their preference is to date someone within their race who makes more money than them. Most people then default back to their family's racism. Go right back. And Meghan is taking them kicking and swimming into the next realm, into the future. And they ain't ready. And until they get ready, I won't be concerned with what happens one iota to their ass. I just won't. It looks like 1,000 years of repression, subjugation, and continued stratification to me across the globe. That's what it looks like to me. And that's what it feels like. It is not just about some ancient history, but the current one that continues to haunt them as we watch the casket, as we watch the funeral, as we watch all the pomp and circumstance and then all the tears and all the people crying and them talking about how great the queen was and how she dressed and the handbags and all of that and the horses and whatever the fuck they want to talk about the royal family. At the end of the day, they're like every other family that needs to deal with their shit. The shit that they put out as people, the talks that are had and not had, whether it's my family versus Tyler Perry's perception that he doesn't need to talk about racism to his child, to his son, which is one of the most disrespectful and disingenuous and dangerous things to do. You're putting people in a world where you know there's race, or you're denying that racism is even a problem. And I have to think, the fact that they're sharing the amount of money, Tyler Perry and the royal family, they're sharing an insane amount of wealth as examples. Maybe they think they can escape the realities of the world and the realities of the world that they themselves impact. Because there are a lot of people looking at Tyler Perry, too, and saying, you know, I'm not going to have to talk with my kid either. Tyler didn't have it with his kid. So why should I have it with mine? And the royal family that's content to try to ignore Meghan and her claims. Until we see all of these people deal with it directly, they don't live in the same world you and I do. They don't live in the same world that you and I do. At least I can sit here and talk openly and honestly about my world, my life, my struggles, that are still ongoing. I am far from perfect, but I am not the man. I am not the man that a lot of people have probably wanted me to become. I am my own man, self-made, self-created. And with the blessing of my parents and their prayers, I continue to be the person that has always been in those baby pictures. One that stood out to me is there's a crowd of people, and I'm there with my cousins, and we're all about the same age. Some of us are older, and someone's trying to take a picture of us. I have no idea who it is. I am the only one who walks off from the picture. There are like three frames of me from the first frame of everybody standing together. I'm standing in front of them. I literally walk off toward the camera. In the second frame, I get close. I move from close to a little closer. By the fourth frame, I am right in front of the camera and everybody's right behind me. I've always been the leader. I've always been an outlier. I've always been the person that can truly keep an open heart and open mind after giving all of the information. And I think we all deserve that too. I think the people that listen to this show are open-minded. You're independent-minded. Most of you, if you stuck around after I came out of the closet as bisexual, then you are truly open-minded. You said you want to see where this goes. You want to see what happens next. And that's the lovely part of it, is when you can remain open-minded and open-hearted. When you can be the person that you are meant to be, despite what others dictate they want you to be. You, sir. You, ma'am. You, whoever you are, whatever pronoun you go by, are a leader. I said it and I meant it. That's your week in review. Guys, don't worry about the world coming to an end, because if it does, technically, we'll all be dead. Most of us will be dead. Guys, I've had fun, but I gotta run. If I'm not here, I'm there. There is ReadyNewsView.com, the World Web. Rain like go to sitting on the dock of the bay, baby. NewsView.com, the World Web. Yes, my family. Yes, I'm related to those ratings. Not my money, which means I'm back your way Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. with more Ready News Review Unrestricted.